This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last week, after all Ruby's preparations and anticipation for her wedding to Douglas, which she hoped would protect his illicit relationship with Frank, Ruby was left empty and dazed in the wake of their happiness.
On the damp back step with her teacup, Ruby started making a list. The morning sky was dull. She waggled the pencil between her fingers. Wednesday's registry office appointment was only 4 days away. Crikey, Dick. Why hadn't Douglas given her more notice? Or had he mentioned it when she wasn't listening? Now the date was set. There were things to organise, things to consider. The ceremony might be meaningless, but the idea of wearing her work clothes for it depressed her. Her old blue skirt was out of the question. Why shouldn't she wear new clothes to the registry office? Needn't be anything fancy. Most of Mrs. Pierce's materials were out of season, too gaudy or the wrong colour. Of the fabric Ruby liked best, the length was too short to do much with. In a shop window, she'd seen some chartreuse-coloured wool material that would make a pencil skirt. If she bought it on Monday after work, there would be enough time. The yellowy-green was a bit daring for a woman of her age, but it was perky. She needed perk, even if it cost her 10 guineas a yard. And chartreuse would look rather smart and modern under the green mohair coat. Vi could bloody well add that to her gossip.
And she turned up mutton dressed as lamb.
Madame Hoja would laugh and remind her she wasn't yet 30 and free to dress as she liked as long as she was fashionably elegant. La mode was everything after all. If she stretched to spend money on a pair of brown high-heeled shoes and matching leather gloves, she'd have nothing left. And she needed a suitable hat. The rust hat Madam had given her clashed with the green coat. She threw her notebook aside and watched the glistening passion fruit leaves on the boundary fence being teased by the light wind.
Good morning.
Douglas stepped past her to empty the teapot over the weeds.
Where's Edie?
Polishing the bathroom taps, Ruby said. Her mind had switched to reclaiming the garden.
She's not there. I've just been in. There's a bike in the shed.
But Ruby had sprung to her feet. If she's skived off to read, she couldn't call out. Frank might be sleeping. The bathroom was empty. The brasso tin sat next to the soap, and the blackened rag draped over the edge of the bath. In the bedroom, Edie's book had been left splayed open, spine up on the floor. Ruby looked in the rooms and ran into the yard calling, Edie! Edie!
Coming!
The thinness of that innocent voice as Edie appeared from around the side of the house.
Mum?
Ruby first hugged her daughter to her, then shook her. Where were you? You had a job to do. Where were you?
What have I done?
Edie said.
Steady on.
Douglas took a step toward them. Stay out of it, Ruby barked, and he retreated. She put her arms around Edie again.
How many times have I told you?
I was just in the front yard, said Edie. I thought I heard a kitten.
Looking for a kitten. What child shouldn't be free to hunt for a kitten in a front yard? She wrapped her arms around her daughter again. I just have to know where you are. She gulped, then pressed Edie to her bosom again, wishing there was an indestructible chain that could tie Edie to her forever.
I did the taps,
Edie said in a small voice. I saw them, all shiny, said Ruby. But you didn't put the cleaning things away. Do that and you can read for a while. Shall I make you a cup of warm milk? Maybe if we ask Frank and Douglas nicely, I can get a kitten for you. Edie looked up.
A real kitten! To keep!
What sort of kitten would you like?
Ginger! Or black and white. I don't mind. Will it love me?
Of course it will, chicken. Now run off and finish that job. When Edie left, Ruby sank heavily onto the porch step.
What on earth's eating you?
Douglas's face was a portrait of disapproval.
I know it's not for me to say.
Ruby glared at him. How could she tell him that she was holding on to each day with her fingernails, that she was falling apart? That last night a taxi had followed them and she'd recognized someone from a criminal gang she used to know. Of course not. She had to say something. I heard a young girl went missing somewhere, right from the very street where she lived.
But that wasn't here, not in Palmerston North, he said.
No. Auckland. She did not say another child had been taken while her mother wasn't looking. Down by the fun park, down behind St. Kevin's Arcade. And she couldn't tell him about Lou Watkins. She sagged onto the step, her elbows on her knees. I worry about her. You don't know what it's like.
You'll have us, Frank and me, from here on in. There's no need for...
The neighbourhood was full of Saturday life. A mob of children was playing somewhere, shrieking and shouting. A sports whistle. The shrill voice of a woman cooing, Bunkin! Here, puss, puss, puss! Then a man's voice, cursing, violent. Something crashing, a dog's savage bark. A yelp. A motorcycle puttered. An engine roared and a car backfired like a gunshot. Or a gunshot. I wish there wasn't any need to bring Vi into the wedding plans at all, grumbled Ruby. The sun sliced its way through the grey clouds.
Don't tell me all this has got you rattled, he said. It was meant to be a simple affair, remember?
His words meant nothing. She shrugged. Douglas sat on the step beside her and held out a new packet of Du Maurier.
Have one.
Thanks. He lit it, and she inhaled deeply, letting the smoke swirl through and settle her.
I certainly hadn't imagined wedding guests, he said. Don't forget why Vi's a witness.
Even though his tone was hushed, she stood up on her toes to see if Vi was near the fence with her ears flapping. There was no sign of her.
With your boss and Vi, we have the two witnesses we need, Douglas said.
Did he think that was all there was to it? Won't Frank be put out if he's not one of them? Ruby said.
The best man can't be.
A best man? It was all getting complicated. She got heavily to her feet. Best get on.
If you could do your own washing, I'll make some biscuits to take over to Vi.
What about Louise cake? Frank loves that. We've got jam. Have we got coconut?
We'll see. I'll make something plainer to take next door first. Edie and I can do Louise cake tomorrow. Ruby cut some butter into a bowl, set it to soften over a pot of hot water from the kettle, and went back to the laundry to whisper again to Douglas. He was sloshing men's underwear about in the tub.
I'm not sure what to do about Edie, she said. I haven't told her it's as soon as Wednesday. I haven't asked the headmaster if she can have the afternoon off. She's missed so much school already.
He squeezed water out of a handful of socks.
Children don't expect to take part in what grown-ups do, do they? It's not as though it's going to be a grand affair.
She'd seen Edie going through Genesis magazines. What if she was imagining a white wedding? Did you ask whether a child can be there?
No. I don't know that they do.
He ran clean water into the tub. She took that as a signal. He had nothing more to say.
Janice would know.
The butter melted more than she wanted. Unaccountably, it made her heart sink. She pushed the back door to, shutting out the sound of his splashing, and used the wooden spoon to poke at the softening butter. It was all right for Douglas. It was all so simple for him. If he couldn't pare things down to a bare core, he started stuttering and stammering, and he took on an utterly helpless look. It took effort not to despise him for it. What a strange household it will be, with him being a clot, and Frank, all bluster and theatrical dazzle, his glib jibes and his bullet-a-gate approach to life. It certainly wouldn't be dull. More importantly, they each accepted Edie. At least she'd made enough clothes for Edie to be presentable at the registry office. The cherry red coat standing next to her outfit would be a mismatch, but there wasn't time to make Edie anything else. Her teeth were clenched again. She rubbed the hinges of her jaw and kneaded the furrows on her forehead. From the window, she watched Douglas pegging dripping woolen socks on the line, next to several pairs of men's not quite white undershorts, all lengthened out of shape by the water still in them. And he had them taking up too much line. Didn't he know how to put them through the wringer without ruining the elastic by folding a towel around them first? One day she'd tell him.
I've been thinking.
Frank scraped his chair back. Ruby startled.
Hell, Frank!
Is the kettle on?
He used the edge of the table for balance to ease himself down. Have you got pills left?
I'm all right, bit gammy again.
His grin was not convincing.
I've been thinking about next Wednesday. Could we have a sort of bash back here afterwards? Tink would like that, wouldn't she? By the way, where is she?
Reading, or drawing in her room, Ruby said. I've been rather enjoying the peace and quiet.
So, what do you think? Can we rustle up some sausage rolls and cucumber sandwiches between us on Wednesday morning?
It's not cucumber season. Ruby pulled one of Mrs. Pierce's cookery books off the shelf. Edie would be thrilled. Just a simple afternoon tea sort of thing, though. Shouldn't we see what Douglas thinks?
I talked to him about it last night.
Why didn't he mention it this morning?
He's a bit terrified of you, you know, said Frank.
That's ridiculous, she huffed. You do realize an afternoon tea here would have to include Vi?
Should even things out, shouldn't it? No good having ill feeling closing things off.
Irritation burned the back of her neck. There were other things she wanted to get done, and now this. Crystals of sugar weren't dissolving into the butter no matter how hard she beat it with the spoon. She fought the impulse to dash the lot to the floor.
"Sit down,"
Frank spoke gently. Had he read her mind? With a sharp intake of breath, he got to his feet.
Let me make the tea, and I'll get you the egg beater. It's somewhere. I'd like to give you a hand. Light work and all that reminds me of baking with Mother when I was a nipper."
She let him put his arm around her, and she rested her head against him for a moment.
"I suppose you'd better come in, then."
Vi eyed the tin with a picture of spaniels on it and opened her back door a little more, looking behind Ruby.
"Where's your little girl?"
"Edie's doing her Saturday chores." Ruby held forth the tin of biscuits. "I hoped to have a word with you, Vi."
"My tin?"
Vi gave it a little shake.
"I wondered where that had got to. I must have left it with Frank and forgotten it."
"Still, you have it now, with some rolled oat biscuits I made this morning."
"Very nice, I'm sure. I've just had my cup of tea. I can put the kettle on to warm the pot if you like."
"I won't, thanks." Vi hadn't invited her to sit. Ruby held her ground.
"You must be kept busy," said Vi. "How's Frank? I saw Dr. Bradshaw's car there the other week."
"Edie's been ill. She was in bed for a whole week." She decided not to tell her about Frank.
"I'm sorry to hear it."
Ruby plunged in. "Vi, you probably noticed Douglas's car here quite a lot lately. Well, you may like to know Douglas and I are getting married." Vi's eyebrows almost disappeared into her permed hairline. Ruby continued. "Frank's going to be best man, of course."
"Of course."
Vi stuck her chin out.
"They were on the stage together, you know. That was before the war. Oh, the shows they put on."
"Yes, they said." Vi slanted her mouth.
"I could have sworn they were both confirmed bachelors."
"Well, there you are," said Ruby. "I was sure my life was going to be different too. Things turn out funny sometimes."
"Don't they?"
Vi said. "We wanted to ask, would you like to be one of our witnesses at the registry office?"
"Me? At the registry office?"
Vi made a face. For the scowl on Vi's face, Ruby might as well have suggested a do in a lady's restroom. "Well, it just seems right," she said. "Considering all you've done for Frank after his mother passed away, I set us off on the wrong foot, and I'm sorry for that." Vi simply nodded. "I'll be staying on as Frank's housekeeper," said Ruby. "And, of course, Douglas is moving in." Clouds seemed to cross the woman's face. Ruby gave a smile. "The house will seem rather full. It might take time to settle into new routines."
"Yes, married couples," Vi sniffed. "Even those who choose a registry office need time to themselves. I only hope it isn't going to be awkward for Frank."
"I hope not."
"So, when is this registry office marriage to take place?"
"On Wednesday at 2 o'clock. It shouldn't take long." I normally go to ladies' Bible study on Wednesday afternoons.
Oh, I wouldn't want to inconvenience you. One of the other guests will do it. I'll let you get on, then.
No, no. I'm sure it won't hurt to miss the meeting just this once,
Vi said quickly, without smiling.
2 o'clock on Wednesday. I'll be there.
Ruby turned to go.
Thank you for the biscuits, said Vi. I should say congratulations to you and Douglas. And pass on my love to Frank, will you?
It was done. As far as the registrar was concerned, they were married, and they had papers to prove it. Douglas did what was expected of him and put his arm around her waist, his other arm draped over Frank's shoulder, and they bunched up, with Edie in the front, so Janice could get a picture. The faces of both men were alight with smiles, happy. Frank's knuckles were against her arm as he held on to Douglas.
The three of you, and Edie. Oh, that's so sweet, cried Janice, stepping backward across the footpath with her box brownie camera.
Madam, please step closer, you're not in the frame.
Vi, are you in?
Madam Hodger declined with her hand. Vi shook her head. Ruby was too numb to smile. Now that it was over, she ached with emptiness. She watched Vi and Madam exchange small smiles and small words. Janice was saying small things. Frank's mouth moved, speaking. How radiant he looked. No sign of illness. He looked like the happy groom, and Douglas the other happy groom, looking at each other dangerously fondly, patting each other on the back. Had some other secret ceremony taken place in a code only they knew? On the footpath, Vi held her handbag in front of her with both hands, as if it were a shield, her eyes on everything. Ruby tried to smile. It was all going on without her. She was viewing the scene from behind a veil she wasn't wearing, and she wanted to run. Run, run away. Her new brown shoes seemed stuck to the granite steps, and her knees were weak. The hat Madam had given her, the one she'd trimmed to hide the stain of her blood, was on her head. Lovely hat, someone had said. Never mind how lovely it was, or what Madam thought of it. The stain remained, invisible under the trims, but seeping into her. Her stain. It was like a nail hammered into her skull. The gold band on her third finger winked back at her in the sunlight. At last, she had a ring, and she was a missus.
Oh, Ruby, do smile for the photo,
Janice directed, back into photographer mode.
Smile! Let's have one just with Frank and Douglas on each side and Ruby in the middle.
Obediently, Ruby stretched her lips. At that second, Douglas and Frank each planted a kiss on her cheeks. Janice squealed with delight.
Hooray!
Frank lifted his cane in the air. Douglas grinned. Frank's solicitor, Mr. Peterson, who'd turned up on Frank's direction to be one of the witnesses, displacing Madam, shook hands with both men, as if it were their own day. And it was. After tipping his hat and giving a slight bow to Madam Hodger, he shook Ruby's hand.
Congratulations to you, Mrs. Woods, he said soberly. I wish you every happiness.
That last one's going to be a corker.
Janice wound the film and put the camera back in its bag.
Everyone to afternoon tea at our place, Douglas was saying.
She felt an arm link into hers.
Come, my dear, said Madame Shiponya Hodja. I'll take you in my car. Edie can sit on your knee.
Thank you.
Had the words come out of her mouth or not? I'm sorry you didn't get to sign as a witness, Ruby said as they walked to the car.
I did not come for that. Frank's solicitor, Mr. Peterson, was here to sign.
Yes, I didn't know he was coming.
I think they will do their best for you, Frank and Douglas.
Edie shouldn't have had the day off school for this, Ruby said.
Yes, Edie, said Madam, enigmatically.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.